show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are, a minute past the hour. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. And it has been for, as of this evening, 9 years. That's right. It's birthday night on the Horn. 9 years ago this evening, I signed on with Agnes at my side to something that we didn't know if it would last a week, a month, a year. A year seemed rather ambitious, frankly. And here we are 9 years later. Lots of stuff has come and gone since then. A lot of programs. Lots more have started up. We have been here. Yes, I agree, Carol. Carol says, happy ninth. Seems a shame the Horn isn't yet old enough to drink. We'll have to take care of that for him. I don't know, but then again, in progressive radio years, I think we're 900, considering the paucity of progressive broadcasting out there. Not a whole lot of us out there, but no, the horn is hung tough, and it is because of you. It is because of you that we have lasted as long as we have, and it will be because of you if there's a 10th anniversary this time next year. a lot of effort's gone into this. You know, I try to run through the essential credits of everybody who makes all of this happen every evening. And there are more, of course. On this particular evening, I'm thinking of people like Peter Godbold and Joe Vecchio, and of course my colleague Rick Smith and Guy James. It has been an amazing ride thus far. And, Sergi, you're absolutely right. The Horn has outlasted Air America by a long shot. Of course, you know, when you're hemorrhaging $80,000-plus a day, it's hard to be anything resembling sustainable. And at one point in time, that's what Air America was doing. This is an entirely different model, however. This is a model based upon the expertise of people going through their everyday lives. This is not a program based upon so-called experts who don't know what it is to have to interrupt a work day to go and get an oil change or try to figure out whether to be late for work or go to the doctor's appointment or don't know what it is to juggle the grocery bill versus the medicine bill versus new tires to replace the Maypops on the 15-year-old automobile. This is a reality-based program. This is also Friday on the front porch. Hooray! My apologies for my absence of the last couple of days, but those of you who have been following my Twitter and Facebook feeds know that I've been on a bit of an odyssey. First, it was up to Pittsburgh to the airport to pick up my son, coming back from his odyssey to the West Coast. Ferg is now officially a cowboy. He has done real live, honest to goodness, no kidding, cowboy work. And he enjoyed it. He enjoyed it immensely. Hard work. Very hard work. Got a few battle scars to show for it, as well as a hat and a tat. And thinks he might like to go back and do it some more come springtime. Then had to roll back south and had to take the boss to the doctor, and then came back to make sure we were here in time for this here 9th birthday celebration. I want to send out special thanks to Paul from Parts Unknown. Email rolled in a little bit ago. He wrote, "Happy 9th anniversary to your show being on the Internet. It has been a pleasure to listen to the show and become part of the community we have all created here." And Paul from Parts Unknown gets it absolutely right. The community we have all created here. Paul says, "I gave a $90 contribution as a 9th anniversary gift. Here's hoping others follow suit." Thank you, Paul. Thank you very kindly. You might recall Paul is also the creator of About Every Christmas Time, what we lovingly refer to and deliciously refer to as Paulmans. Blanched, peeled, sea-salted, roasted almonds. And my goodness gracious, are they good. So thank you this evening. Thank you very much to Paul from Parts Unknown for getting us started on this anniversary broadcast. Program director Kate out there on the front range this evening, volunteer program director, says, "Welcome home. Hope it all went well. Haven't hooked up to the show yet, so I don't know if you're even hot tonight." Well, we are. We're hot every night. Kate says, "We've all heard about Ebola, the Washington shooting, yada, 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 all day and all night. Is there anything new in your stacks?" Sigh. Might be. There just might be. Although I will divert long enough to note that I had a note from Dr. John earlier. And yes, this it's caught on. Dr. John's note was subject lined, "Egads, Ebola." "Now that a doctor in New York City has tested positive, I wonder how long it'll be before people say they're canceling travel to New York." Checks Twitter feed. Wow, that was fast. Yeah. And John also sent along this little morsel. And yeah, there's other stuff. And look, it's Friday on the front porch, so we're going to talk about anything that comes to mind for you guys. And this being our birthday Friday on the front porch, I hope to goodness that we're going to have a huge bunch, in the Friday on the front porch Horn Malloy Skype chat group conversation gathering. A huge bunch. Thank you, Randy. Thank you, Randy. Very, very kindly. Randy kicking in on this birthday evening. It is much appreciated. That makes $130 this evening so far on this, our 9th anniversary. Oh, dear goodness. Here's the note that Dr. John sent along. Dustin Voles, writing at nationaljournal.com. "Twitter is often a place for hyperbole and political spin, but here's something new. On Thursday night, health officials confirmed an Ebola case in New York City, the fourth diagnosis of the disease in the United States, which means that there are more toxic justices on the Supreme Court of the United States than there are cases of this toxic virus. Okay. Shortly after the news broke, Senator Ted Cruz's Deputy Chief of Staff for Strategy, Nick Muzzin? Dunno. Sent a tweet that he has since self-deleted. Before Obamacare, there had never been a confirmed case of Ebola in the U.S. Then he issued the, let me guess, non-apology apology. Earlier tweet was a bad joke. My sarcasm did not translate well online. Deleted. Oh, that's what it was, because everybody knows, Senator Ted for being just an absolute, he's a veritable senatorial freaking onions, what he is. Okay, hopefully we will, that'll be the end of that. Of course it won't be the end of that. I should know better. I really, really should. I should know better than to turn on the radio whilst traveling. But I did this morning, much to my chagrin, and much to the dismay of my, I guess, digestive system. First, and this never happens, okay? Understand. Now, I know some of you live in places where National Petroleum Radio actually runs interesting programming besides Morning Edition and All Things Considered and BBC World News and Fresh Air with Terry Gross. Some of you live in places that carry the Diane Rehm show, for instance. Some of you live in places where there's more conversational discussion-type programming. I don't. I live in a public radio sort of cave where once Morning Edition is over, they hand it off to Performance Today. And that happens right at pretty much 9 o'clock, or shortly after the headlines at 9 o'clock, 9:05, call it. Oh, but not today. Oh, no. No, I'm out on the road and listening to the radio, so consequently, there's got to be something to make me go. Yeah. In this case, it was an interview hosted by a young broadcaster at West Virginia Public Radio by the name of Ashton Mara. Whose intentions, I'm sure, are as pure as unalloyed gold, but whose execution came off wanting. Yeah. So, what do I mean? I mean that here, with about 11 days to go before the general election on November 4th, they decided to put on a program, and I forget what they called it, Action Point, or Point of Action, or Political Gobbledygook. I think the last one would probably have been the most appropriate. And Ashton Mara sat down for a conversation, and no, I don't have audio of it, and frankly, I think you're probably going to wind up being grateful when I tell you what was said. But it was an interview in which it was rather obvious from the tone and delivery that every question had been carefully scripted. It was an interview between young, and I do mean young, Ashton Mara. I don't know how old she is, but wow. Easy. It was an interview between Ashton Mara. And my congressman in the West Virginia 3rd Congressional District, Nick Joe Rahal. Now, bear in mind, Nick Joe Rahal has been in the Congress for 38 years. And he is running against a sort of chameleon-esque candidate who is currently a Republican by the name of Evan Jenkins. Now, Evan Jenkins has also been a Democrat. He's also been a Republican. He's also having a sort of toe-tapping in the men's room dalliance with the Tea Party and has been the recipient of ungodly amounts of Koch brothers money here in West Virginia. And is one of the ones who's been running around every time, you know, for instance, Nick Joe Rahal will say, I love coal. And and Evan Jenkins will respond, no, you don't. I love coal. You love that Obama. You done went and voted for that Obamacare. And now there's all kinds of people that's living in their health care hammocks on the Medicaid. Tens of thousands, 160,000 of them in West Virginia. And the flag is a-falling. So, at least ideologically, I've got a smidgen of respect for Nick Joe Rahal. A smidgen. But today it was dodge the phone poles, try to keep away from the light standards, you get parked in a hurry before something stupid happens, from what I was listening to on the radio. Holy God. I am not kidding. Ashton Mara, bless her, God love her, Ashton Mara tossed a softball up real lobby and slow like over the plate. Goddamn thing must have looked like a watermelon to Nick Rahal when he started to swing at it. And I mean, he knocked it plumb out of the park.
But Congressman Rahal, can coal mining safely and effectively coexist with a tourism economy?
Well, Ashton, I think it can. I mean, looky here. I was a freshman congressman when we drafted and passed the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act, which Jimmy Carter signed into law in 1977, never mentioning, of course, Nick Rahal didn't, the fact that Jimmy Carter said, wow, is this a stinker? Oh, my heavens, this is a bad bill. Or something like that. In Washington speak, President Carter evinced grave misgivings about the bill, as well he should have, because Jimmy Carter may well be the most intelligent, wisest man to have occupied the presidency since John Kennedy. And the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act opened this Pandora's box that actually codified and wrote into law the ability of coal companies to blow up entire mountains, shove the detritus over into the valleys, kill everything that lives, bury streams, poison communities, and scrape, and in the process eliminate tens of thousands of coal mining jobs. And so Nick Rahal continued and said, and we have proven that we can, when we wrote the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act, we used West Virginia for a model. Cause we was back here just a reclaiming and a keeping the air clean and the waters pure. I kid you not. I mean, just because I'm doing the funny voices, you might think that I'm somehow, No, he said these things. He specifically referenced how clean the air is around coal mine sites. Really? Never mind, of course, paying no mind, and this is just another example. example of what you deal with around here. Paying no mind whatsoever, pretending it doesn't exist, in fact, a study by Ken Ward Jr., and what we have to do to get this man a Pulitzer, I haven't yet figured out, but as soon as I do, I'll tell you, and we'll all do it, because he needs one. Ken Ward Jr., writing on October the 16th, 2014, that would be 8 days ago, a new West Virginia University study has found that dust from mountaintop removal coal mining operations promotes the growth of lung cancer tumors. We're safely doing mining, and our air is clean in West Virginia, said Representative Nick Joe Rahal. No, that's not in the study. That's what he said today. The study results provide new evidence for the carcinogenic potential of mountaintop removal dust emissions and support further risk assessment and implementation of exposure control for that dust, according to the paper published online Tuesday by the journal Environmental Science and Technology. A growing body of evidence links living in proximity to mountaintop removal activities to greater risk of serious health consequences, including significantly higher reports of cancer, the study said. Our finding strengthens previous epidemiological studies linking mountaintop removal to increased incidence of lung cancer and supports adoption of prevention strategies and exposure control. And see, this wasn't like highfalutin ivory tower modeling kind of stuff. No. Actual mountaintop removal dust that was collected at sites around mountaintop removal operations were used to test their effect on lung tissue. The scientists examined its effects on human lung cells to try to investigate previous statistical evidence that showed elevated lung cancer in coal mining communities, even after adjusting for other factors such as smoking. Yeah, these studies all take our bad habits into account. Our smoking, our gravy fixation, the fact that we, you know, like to swill vast amounts of soda pop and occasionally beer, maybe homemade liquor, who knows what. It all gets taken into account. And lo and behold, what did they find? Well, chronic exposure to mountaintop removal dust induced cell changes that indicated development of lung cancer. While the data did not indicate tumor initiation, it did show lung tumor promotion and progression that showed the dust as a health concern as a cancer promoter. What they did was use a dust exposure level roughly equal to what mining community residents might experience over an 8.5-year period. And I don't know who to give the greater shame on you to Nick Rahal for just once again ignoring another vital piece of peer-reviewed scientific evidence from his own state's premier university, or to young Ashton Mara, Cub radio reporter, for letting him breeze right past it. I mean, I know. There are certain biases that exist out there about my beloved dysfunctional state. But West Virginia Public Radio really does attempt journalism. And to that end, I realize I'm making an assumption here. I'm assuming that this interview was done live. I sincerely doubt, based upon the things that Nick Joe Rahal said in the interview, that it was more than a couple of days old. If it wasn't, I'm almost certain it was not 8 days old. So the journalism practitioners at West Virginia Public Radio damned well should have known about this new report. And it's almost impossible that they would not have known about the other 20, 21, 22, 23 reports that link mountaintop removal to a grave and ongoing health crisis in the region, but it doesn't exist. And that's why I refer to media, with the exception of people like Ken Ward, and what we got to do to get that man a Pulitzer, I don't know. But, you know, just being willing to publish this stuff and his paper, the Charleston Gazette, they deserve recognition for that. Because, I mean, it is almost on a level of the Sophie Scholl and her brother and those who published the leaflets of the White Rose during a certain other historic period in history. It is not an overstatement to say that media in this state are Stalinist. You may have heard the old saying from the Soviet Union that there is no TASS in Pravda and no Pravda in TASS. There's no news. Yeah. There's no truth in the news and no news in the truth. Something like that. It's not like I speak Russian. Well, okay, a little bit. I was listening to this silly mummery that was going on the radio earlier today, and I just, Pozhalista. Because I don't know what the Russian would be for us. What the son of a... No. So then we keep driving, and I've still got it. Well, I left public radio when they moved over to music to bury your old cousin Harold by. Because that's what we get. Performance today and classical music all day long. Boring, 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 boring. Until it's time for Terry Gross. So I switched over to the local for-profit-owned network that features a cat named Hoppy Kercheval. No, really. Who then did his best Ashton Mara impression to toss softballs to a dude from Maryland named Alex Mooney, who wants to be a congressman from West Virginia and is running against a guy named Nick Casey, neither of whom have also ever acknowledged the mountaintop removal health crisis or any of the studies pointing thereto. Woof! And that was, again, that was overripe cantaloupes lobbed softly over the plate. But still, it came out pretty obvious that Alex Mooney is, well, yeah, what his last name intimates at. He's a lunatic. So there you go. And I mention these things because one of the central facts out of the existence of the Horn over these last 9 years. I mean, God knows we've talked about everything coming and going. If you just look back at the news from 2005, well, we started in February 2004, but from October 24th, 2005, up to now, there's not much we haven't discussed. But in the course of those 9 years, this radio network has devoted more time to the issue of mountaintop removal than any other broadcast or combination of broadcasts on the entire planet. And with the exception, for a number of years, of Coal River Mountain Watch, with whom I am closely associated and proud to be. There has been no support for a radio network that has devoted more time to the single greatest ongoing environmental, human rights, social justice, injustice in the United States. You've done that. Sierra Club hasn't done that. Sierra Club has never given a nickel to the horn. Appalachian Voices didn't do that. Appalachian Voices has never given a nickel to help get this message out. As much as I like them, the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition has never given a nickel to help get this message out via the horn. The Alliance for Appalachia grudgingly sponsored a couple of trips to Netroots Nation. That's it. Only Coal River Mountain Watch, the point of the spear, the shiny, sharp point of the tip of the spear in the struggle against mountaintop removal, has done anything to help keep this going, and we might have gone under without Coal River Mountain Watch's help. But the vast majority of the support that has made it possible for this broadcast to be a clearinghouse for all things mountaintop removal, for the manifest horrors that are practiced upon people in Central Appalachia, the vast majority of the support for that effort has come from you. And even though a lot of people don't know it, they have you to thank for the fact that more people know about mountaintop removal now than knew about it when the horn got started. Because in turn, you yourself have been activists. You were there when we got the AIC Act, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, introduced in Congress in June of 2012, and you have told your friends, you have told your neighbors, you have talked in your churches and your synagogues, you've talked in your schools, you have talked to your community grassroots groups about mountaintop removal, and you have made it of grave concern in places about as far from Appalachia as you can get. Because of you, people in Russia know about mountaintop removal. Because of you, people in Germany know about mountaintop removal. Because of you, people in Great Britain, the UK, in Ireland, in Italy, in Greece, in China, in Japan and Australia know about mountaintop removal. And so I say to you, you deserve, on this ninth anniversary of the horn's existence, you deserve the lion's share of the thanks and the applause. You brought more people into this conversation. There never would have been a Friday on the front porch if there hadn't been a whole lot of you willing to form up as a group and join in the conversation. There would certainly never have been a Friday on the front porch had it not been for the tireless, indefatigable dedication of our chat room moderator and Horn Malloy Skype group moderator, Sparky, in keeping the whole thing running for years and years and years on end. Ah, okay, thank you, Randy. Yeah, it was Pravda and Izvestia, not Pravda and Tass. Aha! Yeah. Pravda and Izvestia. Told you I didn't know diddly worth a Russian. Carol pointing out with regard to the dust study and the conclusions thereof, I could have saved him a whole lot of dough. Common sense says that's what all that dust would do. Yeah, it's not good for you. It wasn't good for people when we first learned about breathing dust in a little place called Dolly Bridge, West Virginia, which for a span of several years was known as the town of the living dead, and is now known as the lower end of what is referred to historically, when it's referred to at all, as the Hawk's Nest Tunnel disaster, in which people, primarily people of color, men of color, worked to drill a tunnel for Union Carbide Corporation, we'll meet them again later at Bhopal, and created the single largest industrial disaster in American history. That's when we learned about something called silicosis and occupational pneumoconiosis. And back then, it was the early part of this century, 30s. Back then, if a guy came coughing out of the tunnel and said, "Boss, I can't breathe," boss looked at him and said, "Well, you just go on home now. Get you some rest and hope you can get to breathing again. You're fired." And then the man went and died. As one goes over towards Summersville, West Virginia, on U.S. 19, there has been discovered a mass grave of African-American men who were just dumped in pits when they died. Because money. Because profit. And all along, Union Carbide had a whole bunch of doctors on the payroll who said, "There ain't nothing wrong with them men. They's just shiftless and lazy." Same thing happened with black lung. Ain't no such thing as black lung. All them fellers are cigarette smokers. And that's happening all the way down to today. And it's the same tactic with regard to the health crisis that is mountaintop removal. Only where before they outright denied the existence of the diseases, now they just pretend the science doesn't exist. Because that works so well with things like climate change. And it look how long it worked with the tobacco industry. But you are the ones who have made it possible for this conversation to happen. Over the years, you've gotten us through the great septic tank crisis. You helped us literally stay alive during the derecho until we could get back on the air. The determination to keep this broadcast effort going has been absolutely inspiring. So give yourselves all a pat on the back. Pat each other on the back. Because something is going on here at the Horn that isn't happening anywhere else. Long-form conversation. Roundtable conversations. And it's not to be found. A lot of people doing a lot of good work. And we would not be here at all were it not for the godfather of liberal talk, Mike Malloy. He was the impetus behind me deciding to come back to radio after a lot of years of doing other stuff. And you, in combination with the Truth Seekers, have helped to keep this all going during some pretty ugly rough patches. Note coming in from Kate. Happy anniversary. It's been a long, bumpy road. I have so many memories, starting with the month I was in Pascagoula when Steady called in from the volunteer center that I was managing. I had no idea you were out there. Before then, Malloy was my only contact during my first trip to do Katrina relief. That's about the time I went back to Arizona to do palliative care with my friend. I was hooked up with KPNX, staying in touch with you and Mike Malloy and the folks on Sunday morning on KPNX to keep folks updated on the Katrina issues. One of the Sunday mornings that you were calling in, you and Agnes were talking about the news show Strictly Confidential. I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. Since then, my participation has been a blur. The audience has been with me all over Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, and Texas. So many stories, so many hours on air, Those were the days when I had a reliable Verizon connection. Remember the days when I had to walk to the end of the road in Arizona in a dust storm to keep connected? I do. I do. There was a night when I called in from Mount Belzoni. Mount Belzone, sorry. Not Mount Belzoni. And you were nearly speechless. Thanks for all the cultural coaching. Your information and got me and kept me out of some very dicey spots. One of my proudest compliments and acknowledgments was when you told me that I would be the topic of conversation at Thanksgiving dinners up north for a long time to come. This is starting to sound like a family reunion where no one knows all the relatives, so I'll end it here. Thanks to everyone who supports this blessed effort. Thanks for taking my call. Thank you, Kate. Thank you. And it's really hard to fathom for me. I sent a note to Ben Birch earlier this evening because I told him we'd be off air last night and the night before. And I told him that tonight was our ninth anniversary. And he said, could it have been nine? Because that's the general feeling. Because, see, it was 9 years ago, a week ago, that Ben was sitting right here where I'm sitting, setting up the stream servers and setting up the streamers. And for those who are interested, I would say that we are still using 70% or more of the same equipment we used to get this started. The mix desk is the same. The monitors are the same. The Comrex is dead, but it's the same. The compressor is the same. The little studio drive is the same. The computers are different because Peter Godbold taught me to build computers. Because in moments of crisis, computers failed, and we were that close to being toast. And so Peter Godbold quietly sat on a phone. Well, not quietly. We laughed and we carried on a lot. And he taught me to build a computer. And so we've run on built computers. The poor old tired, worn out production computer is every bit of 5 years old. And yeah, we have broken ground. What Kate said about thinking she'd died and gone to heaven when she heard about Strictly Confidential. See, there are programs now that are not only gay-friendly but gay-focused. When Peter Godbold debuted Strictly Confidential, there wasn't. There was not one single radio program about gay people by a gay person. And Peter poured heart and soul into that for 2 years. At least. Straight community learned a lot more about, I mean, and in a sort of ecumenical, you know, wonderful way, gay people interacted with straight people in here on the Horn in ways that almost was unimaginable. People were talking about marriage equality on the Horn on Strictly Confidential long before it was even anything resembling a mainstream issue. That's what all of this means. And I would be remiss as I note that we're still using a whole bunch of the same equipment. I would be remiss if I did not note, for those who don't know the story, that this all begins with a woman hearing a radio show. Dr. Bill was holding down a two-hour time slot over at the little AM talk in Beckley that otherwise was just 24 hours of right-wing swill. But for 2 hours, there was a little progressive light. And I wound up filling in for Dr. Bill in 2003 while he was gone for about 6 weeks teaching one of his American history grants. And that's how I got back into radio. And that's when Gina Rebich tuned in one day, because she tuned into Dr. Bill religiously, because her husband Wayne was prone to calling in from time to time. And she heard me filling in for Dr. Bill and called Wayne immediately and said, "We got to get this guy a show." Wayne tuned in. We met, we talked, we became good friends. And so that's how we debuted over on in America's fifth smallest radio market, and added three more hours to per night to a lineup that was otherwise right-wing swill. Wayne found sponsorship at the behest of Gina. That lasted until June the 30th, 2005, and I decided, well, along the way, that it was impossible for me to remain silent, knowing what I was rapidly learning about mountaintop removal. And it cost me a job. It cost me the program. In order to keep the thing on the air, I even offered them to work for free, but no, they were determined to have me gone, because the coal industry was determined to have me gone. Long about the same time, Gina was subjected to what can only be called gross medical neglect, otherwise known as malpractice. And she led a hellish existence for a couple of months before she passed away. Wayne, as one would expect, was devastated. Still is. You don't get over something like that. But when they got rid of the early efforts at this program, trying to censor a voice that was pro-labor, pro-environment, pro-worker, progressive, Wayne looked at me and said, "We're gonna get this back going again." And I don't care what it takes. And it's gonna be a living memorial every day, every night, to my beloved wife and the vision she had of a resurgence of progressive radio. And that is how we had it all in place by October 17th, 2005. The engineer from the radio station had come by and helped get it all patched together. Then Ben Birch drove from Illinois to get it all set up to get out to the web. And on October the 24th, 2005, the horn went live for the first time ever. And we closed that first program, as we have closed every program since, with a reminder that it really is all for Gina. And that's how we get from there to here. It's okay. Asa, this is just an aside to Asa, it's not like they haven't. So, that, I suppose, is this evening's filibobster. There is an abundance of news out there. I mentioned how, there have been other programs. Joe Vecchio ran a magnificent program. John Fox in Australia ran a tremendous program. Bruce Birch ran a beautiful program. At one point in time, we were producing just a couple hours short per day of as much live progressive radio as Air America was for pennies. Joe Vecchio, John Fox, Bruce Birch, Dr. Bill, Guy James, Rick Smith. At one point in time, if you want to look it up in the archives over at White Rose, we had an hour to kill between two shows, between John Fox's program and Peter's, and we came up with something called the Horn Section, which I thought was kind of catchy, and that was one of the merriest hours of radio I've ever done. John Fox, me, and Peter Godbold just, you know, it was like jazz. Total improvisation. And it was magnificent. And everything that's ever been on the horn is archived at whiterosesociety.org if you ever want to go back and check it out. The program has evolved over the years. Used to do a lot of guests. Don't anymore. Because I got kind of tired of the transactional nature of it. And I like the everyday experts that we have here in our family ever so much better. Our buddy Michael in Madison with the subject line, Dr. Bill, writes and says, could you please rewind a bit? I'm curious how you got the six-week fill-in gig. Did you previously know Dr. Bill, or did someone else at the station have you in the Rolodex? No and no. And no. Signed, Michael in Madison, formerly of Columbus. Take care, Michael says, and happy night. Thank you, Michael. No, I didn't know Dr. Bill. No one had me in the Rolodex. But, and this is just a me thing. I had spent a lot of time, because of the work I was doing, on the road. And as I've mentioned in the past, you know, my first job, my first, you know, short of mowing grass and working in a little photographic studio on weekends, my first real go-to-work-everyday job was in radio at a gospel radio station. And it is a bug that when it bites you, you know, you never completely heal. You never get completely well. And so going through college, worked in radio. While I was having that cup of coffee in law school, over the summer I would jock midnights and be the morning drive news guy. Had a foot in both camps, rock and roll and news. Jocked at the campus radio station at WVU. Even took a couple of turns at WUAL, campus station at in Tuscaloosa at the University of Alabama. Worked in my local market there back in Alabama. There's in the chat room, there's even a picture of little baby DJ Bob wearing, of all things, an Ohio State sweatshirt. I'd just come back from Columbus. Working at WLAY. Yeah, that really is the call letters, and it still is. Nobody else seemed to get the joke. One of the stations I worked for was owned by Sam Phillips of, you know, rock and roll history fame. But it stayed with me. And I've loved it all along. And so back in the early aughts, and I should add in, I mentioned Mike Malloy earlier in the process. I started listening to Mike Malloy when I was at CNN Radio in Atlanta. He'd be doing like 9 to midnight or something, and I'd be on my way home at about 10. And I'd listen, and that's the first time I ever heard Malloy. And this is the late 80s. Iran-Contra is in its full toxic blossom, and where no one else in the world dared to say a word against kindly old Grandpa Reagan, Mike was on the air breathing fire and calling down the damnation of the gods upon Ronald Reagan, and having a lot of fun along the way, too. And, of course, he absolutely destroyed the ratings book and went from there to WLS in Chicago. And I seemed always along the way to keep up with Mike. I remember standing in my garage out in our little farm in the country, changing the oil in my car, and the car AM antenna would pick up WLS and listening to Mike in the middle of the night. Well, not middle of the night, but, you know, late at night. I found him again at IE America. And it was at IE America that I would listen to him at work. And then get in my car and realize that radio, especially in West Virginia, was a vast right-wing wasteland of hate and toxicity. And so long about 2003, I looked up and said, by God, that's it. Because, okay, old actors out there know what the actor's nightmare is. It's a nightmare. It's a recognized phenomenon where you have a dream and you're on stage and you don't know what play you're in and you don't know your lines and you don't know what your character is or who the other characters are, and you're probably naked. Well, I had the DJ's nightmare. Starting at about 1999, 2000, I started having the DJ's nightmare. And I would be behind a broadcast board. The microphone would be hanging in front of me. And I'd be doing my patter to come out of a song or go into the next or run some sort of a break, babbling along, having no idea what the last song was, the next song was, or what, and I'd look up and the clock wouldn't, I had no idea what time it was. I didn't know what break to run next. I couldn't find my advertiser log. And you wake up in a cold sweat. And so long about 2003, early 2003, I just said, listen, I got to do this. I got to try to get back into radio. And started investigating radio stations. You know, back in the day, I had certainly sent my resume around through via radio and records, looking for gigs, that kind of thing. And I happened to wander in and set up a meeting with the owner of this station group, and we sat down and talked, and I said, look, you know, I got the chops. I know what I'm doing. I want a show. And he said, well, this is perfect timing because the guy who does our progressive show, Dr. Bill, is you know, going on a hiatus, and we were just going to be running canned programs and stuff. This is great. We'll still have live programming. I said, awesome. And that's how that turned. And it's kind of the way things have always turned. Michael follows up saying, I'd argue that you still have plenty of guests, Bob. They just tend to let themselves in the back door and make themselves at home, no invitation necessary. Yeah. You know, where I come from, we don't call those folks guests. We call them neighbors. and we call it a neighborhood, and we call it a community. And this has been about a whole bunch of community building. So we'll take a little break here, and then we will go to the Horn Molloy Skype chat group. A reminder, if you want to join in on the Horn Molloy Skype chat group, all you have to do is send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, Sparky Dunk, on Skype. And he'll get you admitted, and we'll get you into the Skype group. I'm already told, and I love your avatar, Sparky. That is an awesome hat. Sparky tells me we got a real good group in the Horn Molloy Skype chat group. And that's another thing that evolved out of the community that was formed with the Horn, and sort of stretched over into the Molloy world. A bunch of people who wanted to keep the conversation going after the programs went off, and man, those conversations have gone on, and they're wonderful. So let me extend some thanks here. I mentioned, and I should also mention from a couple of nights ago, thank you to Ron for helping out. Thank you to Paul from Parts Unknown, who got us started this evening. Thank you to Randy, who kept it going. Thank you to Jay Cruzen. Happy 9th anniversary, Jay Cruzen says. Here's a $150 challenge to other folks who want to help out on this anniversary evening. Thank you to Thomas. Thank you very kindly, Thomas. Thank you to Asa. Indeed. Thank you to Diane in Kansasstan. That would be marvelously coherent, Diane. Thank you for all the kind wishes. Oh, mercy sakes, Jude, I wish I had that chocolate cake in front of me. I can already feel my blood sugar heading for the moon. Yum. Great group in the Horn chat room, headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. And I suppose I should mention, if you wish to kick in on this 9th anniversary birthday celebration, the contribute tab is at headonradionetwork.com. If you wish to do so by mail, you can join in by mailing it in, literally, The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV25801, with the gentle reminder that nothing should be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but rather should be made payable to The Horn or Head on Communications, something like that, because Boss Man Wayne's the one who handles all that. So, yeah, good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Carol Baker, Jan and Jerry. Good evening, Jeremy, John, Jug of Punch. Good evening, Kathy and Kelly and Kenner Jennings and Lance Rocks and Michael and Norma and Retired and Arkellison, Sentient, Stockton Larry, Todd, Will from Chicago. Good evening, one and all. And welcome to the party. So based on something that Kate mentioned in her email, as far as a bumper out or transition to the Friday on the Front Porch group is concerned, yeah, this seems only appropriate. You know, the drive-by truckers are the patron saint band of the Horn, but this particular song has long-time resonance for me, just because it's kind of a song about a DJ. and you'll understand. I remember talking about this at length one evening, and I think it was Scott in Massachusetts who emailed in and said, "Just play it, for God's sakes, Bob. Just play it." For 9 years now, this is Conversation Radio, listener supported. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I'm left of the night, why? Hello, Baton Rouge. Would you turn your radio down? Respect the 7 seconds of late. Wait on my calls like
foot of Mount Belzoni.
Played that in a while, so it probably fit, and yeah. The Nightfly, the title track from Donald Fagen's solo effort, Donald Fagen, of course, of Steely Dan. This is The Horn, 11 minutes past the hour of 7 o'clock here on the East Coast. Friday on the front porch, and a very special one at that, insofar as this is our ninth birthday, our ninth anniversary. Let us go immediately to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Yeah, we got a good group in here, and more space available if you want to jump in. But good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
That is an awesome hat.
I thought you'd like it. I mean, first words I said when I saw your son the other day was nice hat.
And it is a nice hat. It's a big hat. But he had quite the adventure, without a doubt. He certainly did. And he loved getting to meet you.
Well, we sure enjoyed his visiting with him. Got a good ride to Sacramento the other day, too.
Yeah, he was telling me about seeing the almond and pistachio orchards. Who knows? Maybe some of the pistachios in the pistachio challenge came there from.
Well, we drove right by the little town of Artois where they package it.
I'll be darned. Yeah, we got back. We got back here, and he said, you know, because he landed at night in Pittsburgh, but he said the next morning, "Dad, I ain't in California anymore."
No, he was kind of nervous when I dropped him off.
He kept saying, I've gotten real used to clear blue skies that don't have anything but clear blue skies and the occasional great big giant mountain in them."
Mm-hmm.
Because it was overcast the next day.
Mm-hmm.
But he got to see some fall colors on the way home, so that made him feel a little bit more like he was at home. And now he's out running around with a bunch of his pals, so I think he's slowly getting himself reacculturated.
Yes. Okay.
But we do have a good group this evening. Good evening, John.
Hey.
Welcome to the party. Hey, Greg. Good to have you in here this evening.
Hey, Bob. Happy anniversary.
Thank you very kindly. Will is with us. I don't know if Will can talk or not. I'll take that for no. Steve, the sentient being, is with us. Good evening, Steve.
Hi, Bob.
And Roger from Humboldt.
Good evening, Bob. I'm just sorry Ferg couldn't make it over here to the coast and see the bigger trees than other places, because we got the biggest ones over here.
That is absolutely true. And that's one of his larger regrets, is that he didn't get to see the Pacific coast yet. So it's given him something to aim for the next trip out.
Well, the next time he comes out here, give me some time, and because I'm not here all the time because I do my work in the garden and all the rest of that crap. But with a couple of week notice and let Sparky know about it, we can work it out.
Next time he comes out here, give me some time, and because I'm not here all the time because I do my work in the garden and all the rest of that crap.
Uh-oh. We just lost the chat group. Here we go. Okay, let's try again.
I hit the wrong button.
Oh, was that you?
It was Carol that had her radio going.
Oh, okay.
I tried to mute her real quick.
Good evening. Speaking of which, you were next on the list. Good evening, Carol.
Howdy, howdy.
How are you?
Fine, now that I've figured out how to operate the off button.
you know, technology, we have to keep up.
you know, it's that whole on-off switch thing. It's tough.
Let's see. Todd and Kath are with us.
Yeah.
Good evening, Bob.
Happy anniversary, Bob.
Happy anniversary.
Well, it's not happy anniversary, Bob. It's happy anniversary to all of us.
Happy anniversary, Horn.
Yes, there we go. And I would kind of like to know if you have anything special going on to consummate this anniversary this evening.
Oh, I don't know. I think maybe there'll be a light cocktail after the program closes. I happen to be in possession of some very very nice, shall we say, local artisanal rheumatism medicine.
Very good, very good. As a matter of fact, we got some here we're probably going to be imbibing on very soon. Just to celebrate our, jeez. And Odie wishes everybody a happy anniversary also.
Oh, good evening, Odie. And Sergi, good evening. Do we have Sergi? Maybe.
I'm sure... He's probably away from his computer or something.
Well, that being the case, let's jump in. Anybody got any burrs under the saddle? Any bees under the bonnet?
The shootings today. Knocked Ebola off, thank goodness. But everybody needs to know that there's more people die each day from guns than there will ever die from Ebola.
Oh, that's true.
States.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you know how frustrating it gets for me, and I suspect for most of us, to even try to address this issue, because we can talk about it until hell freezes over, but it seems readily apparent that our government is so hopelessly dysfunctional that nothing will ever be done, and the only thing you can really say is that the Republicans in the Congress are perfectly happy with the Tree of Liberty being refreshed from time to time with the blood of school children. I mean, what else are you supposed to come away with than that? I mean, if it was a problem, they'd try to stop it, right?
Well, it's always still the highest bidder, isn't it?
Sadly, yeah. But yeah. I mean, is that a logical fallacy, Carol? If this was a real problem, they'd try to come up with a real solution?
No, not anymore. I used to believe that, but I don't believe that anymore. I believe that if you can afford to purchase an elected representative, then it doesn't matter how many kids die. It doesn't matter how many people commit suicide or how many people shoot an innocent person with car trouble knocking at their door, or how many white guys sitting in a parking lot at a convenience store get pissed off at some kids playing loud rap music. It doesn't matter. The kids are dead. A few people will go to jail. Sadly, a few people will go to jail for it. And it's all about money.
Well, the goddess of irony was apparently putting in triple time today, because right before this happened, we had, like I said, I was driving up the road trying not to, just go straight into the light standards.
Mm-hmm.
But we had Alex Mooney running for West Virginia's 2nd Congressional District, tap dancing around gun questions, by saying, "Well, I don't think I really got to deal with that because, okay, no, I'm sorry, he's got a Maryland accent. I can't do that. I don't think I've got to do that because I think firearms should be a state and local issue, and well, I don't really see the Congress being a, what?" And then this, I mean, it would be lovely if somebody had the money to run an ad of maybe somebody doing a newscast about the shooting in Washington, and then Alex Mooney saying, I think we need all the guns we can have.
Well, you can't have a conversation with anybody anymore, Bob, without a bunch of people jumping up and using all the buzzwords, tyranny, despotic government, disarming the population. And, of course, I'm always told to wake the fuck up, to which I always reply, sorry, if you don't put sheeple behind that, I can't take you seriously. But I don't know how many people have to die. I mean, there was a young man just a town over that I used to work with a couple of years ago. And the kid, he was a nice enough kid, but he got in with a bunch of gun nuts. Everything you saw on his Facebook page was about the nigger Obama and how wonderful guns were. And then in July, he posted a photo of a gun sitting in his lap. And he was bragging about his new toy. And 4 weeks ago, he blew his brains out with his new toy. And he was 26 years old.
On purpose or accidental-like?
On purpose.
Oh, God.
And he had a baby. I mean, he was separated from his girlfriend, but he had a baby. And I'm sitting there thinking, and why is America freer for that? Why is America freer because some kid walked into a high school where he was clearly popular? He was just voted the homecoming king. And he didn't walk up to a random table. He walked up to a table full of his friends and started shooting them in the back. Are we freer for that?
No. And see, the sad thing is, because I've already heard some of it, Carol, is that the speculation will begin not about how did he get hold of a gun or what drove him to use a firearm, but what was wrong with him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's going to be a little tough if this kid just got elected homecoming king, isn't it?
Well, that's kind of how I see it, but this whole thing about the states and the local municipalities should all get to decide individually. I should be a free person. I should be able to go anywhere. I should be able to walk into a grocery store and know that some idiot isn't going to blow me away because he drops his gun on the floor. Bob, it was a couple of months ago. I went into the grocery store and this lady asked me to get something. I'm tall, so she asked me to get something off a shelf for her. Turn around and look, and she's got a sidearm strapped to her. I'm thinking to myself, this woman's 60-some years old. You know, what is she expecting is going to happen down at the Piggly Wiggly?
Or as that I like to call it, the Wigglin' Pig, yes.
That she needs to be packing heat in order to get some tuna fish off the top damn shelf.
Well, they're cowards.
I don't get it.
It's cowardice. I have no problem saying that, except for the fact that if you said to somebody, one of them's face, they'd probably shoot you.
But do I not have a right to walk into a store with a reasonable expectation that I'm not going to be caught in the crossfire?
No, apparently the Second Amendment trumps your right to feel safe while going out to get a jug of milk and a loaf of bread. And I think that's the larger conversation. When I was a kid, and a lot of us, I don't know where the echo's coming from. But when I was a kid, I always heard the adults say, your rights end where my nose begins.
Yes, well, Carol's echoing.
I'm echoing?
Yes.
Do
you have speakers going?
No, I'm on a headphone. I'm on headphones.
Wow. Okay. It seems to have quieted. But anyway, that whole your rights end where my nose begins thing has apparently been canceled out by the right of somebody to shoot my nose off.
I mean, people are blowing people away on the highway just over stupid stuff. I just watched a video, and thank God the guy didn't have a gun. He was in an airport. Did you see the video of the guy in the Dallas-Fort Worth airport who just decided he didn't like a guy's looks on sight? The guy was wearing a pink shirt and a black jacket, and the guy decided on site that he was gay, and by God, this is America.
No, wait. This happened recently, like in October, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, where even...
Yep, it happened yesterday at the DFW airport. Anyway, he went after this guy and attacked him, kicked him right in the schnuts. And like 10 passengers just piled on this guy, knocked him to the ground before he could get, before the police could get in there and get him handcuffed. And he's swearing a blue streak, and there's two black cops sitting on him, right? And he's like, he goes, "This is Mark. This is why you get to walk around and be black." And I thought, man, you are so lucky you are not in Ferguson.
Speaking of whom, I guess Amnesty International dropped a rock on Ferguson. Well, not on, but on the police forces and such. Did you catch that today?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, they issued a report saying that it was a miserable, miserable example of brutal crackdown on civil rights.
Which anybody with eyes knew.
Right, it's kind of like the dust, right?
Exactly. I'll save you a whole bunch of coin doing that study. And it's becoming more apparent by the day that Darren Wilson will never be indicted.
Oh, and I'm so sick of those headlines, by the way. Autopsy report shows Darren Wilson is right. I used to say from time to time, and I still do, that the art of copywriting, or the art of headline writing, is dead. And copy editing is dead.
Bottom line, all they did was print a press release from his attorney.
Yeah, but all the headlines said the same damn thing.
Yeah, because they all copied it from the same place.
Journalism's kind of dead, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. That's what makes programs like this important. I mean, that's because we can sit here and tell the truth.
I mean, I'm not exaggerating, and I'm trying to say what I was saying about Ashton Mara and her puff piece interview of Nick Rahal as gently as I can, because I don't want to violate any boundaries or cross any lines or sound like I'm being sexist. But wow, was that just inept? I mean, if you're a journalist, I mean, this was an important study that was released about something going on in this state 8 days ago, and she didn't even know about it. Or had they reached this is where the sort of incestuous relationship between media and politicians enters in. I don't know this for a fact. I'm engaging in speculation. But the questions sounded so scripted, and the answers were so ready. I mean, I expect to hear gagging. All right. There was one question about, well, what about, Congressman Rahal, do you think people are turned off by all the negative advertising? What if they don't vote?
He couldn't be happier.
No, he needs, well, it depends. No, what he said is, I think no matter how depressed we may get by the sorry state of politics here in 2014, it's a privilege to vote. And it's a privilege that people have fought and died for. And so if you say you're not going to vote, that's our veterans you're insulting. And I, what? Excuse me? I thought the Constitution guaranteed the right to vote. And this is not some sort of anti-war screed. But that's where you go. And the thing is, that had to be a canned answer.
Of course it was.
And by the way, in the 9 years we've been doing this, Nick Joe Rahal's been on this program a couple of times.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, wait, remember back when George was going to get his war on because, you know, they tried to kill my daddy. I had real respect for Nick Joe Rahal because he went to Iraq trying to stop the war from happening. And back here in West Bicol, Virginia, all the little knuckle walkers and mouth breathers started calling Baghdad Nick and Nick Al Rahal, because Nick is of Lebanese descent. And
but by the way,
yeah,
in Texas, a veteran's medical ID card is not valid as ID to vote.
Nope.
Right.
But a gun card is. But your concealed carry permit
is. A concealed carry permit is, but a VA medical card is not. Excuse me. If this is how we're going to treat our troops and stand behind our troops, screw me. I don't want any part of that agenda.
Well, I mean, I'm getting the Texas voter suppression as passed holy writ upon by the Supreme Court is abysmal. You know, when it gets to the point where a federal judge who is a known conservative like Richard Posner is calling these people out, you know that they've gone round the bend. You know, I've got a voter's registration card. It does not have my photograph on it. It has my name and my address. I pop it. I sit it down on the table, and you know, there we go. And they just match it up against the hard copy books and make sure I haven't already voted, and in I go. And that probably, I think that's too much. I don't think democracy suffers if more people vote. See, that's where my problem arises.
Well, of course it doesn't. And the last time I went to vote, I was informed by the election judge that I had to have a photo ID. And I said, no, I don't. And she said, yes, you do. And I said, no, I don't. And I got on the phone and called the county clerk. I told her she better get her ass down there. And then I called my state representative, who was a Republican, whose phone number I have at home, and I knew he was at home that day. And I called him, told him he needed to get his ass down there, since he was the one who voted to have it for this election. And I said, they're down here doing something illegal. She won't let me vote unless I show her a photo ID. And I had my passport and my driver's license in my hand. I just wasn't giving it to her on principle.
Yeah.
Here in California, you never have to leave the house to register and vote.
Well, in Missouri, they won't see your face.
You can register online, and then when you get... Your county has sends you a sample ballot, then you can request an absentee.
I mail in every year.
Yeah.
But see, when you get to places like Missouri and Alabama and Texas, they want to see your smiling white face at the polls.
That's damn right.
White.
And in order to get an absentee ballot, I have to tell them why I want an absentee ballot.
Oh, wow.
And that means that I have to say that I'm not going to be in the district that day. So, of course, I tell them I'm not going to be in the district that day, which I am, because I always absentee vote. But I've always had to lie to do it.
See, I got a little squishy about absentee voting a few years back when I actually read the statute about it. And it may not be this way in other states. But in West Virginia, if I understood the statute correctly, unless the margin of error is unless the margin of votes is less than the number of absentee ballots cast,
mm-hmm.
they don't count them.
I believe that.
Because it becomes mathematically irrelevant. If there are 300,
that's not true in California.
They count them first.
They count the absentees. Which is now not called absentee anymore. It's vote by mail. And they count them before the polls even close. And that's the first returns are what we used to call absentee ballots.
Yeah, that's true.
Meanwhile, early voting has opened in West Virginia, and I think it's a miracle. Well, we still have a nominally Democratic legislature, so they haven't been able to work through all of that voter suppression stuff. But remember, my my argument is that even though we're a little state and a little bit of nothing, we are the canary in the coal mine.
Absolutely.
Going
every
back,
vote should count. Every vote should
going
count.
Back
every...
to, going back to the year 2000, very few people realize this, but Florida did not cost Al Gore the election. If George Bush had just straight out won Florida, but Al Gore had won West Virginia, he would have become the president of the United States.
I didn't know that.
It is an absolute fact.
Wow.
We have five little electoral college votes, and those had consistently and reliably gone to Democrats for eons. And that was the election where they brought Charlton Heston to Beckley, West Virginia, who said, Al Gore's going to get your guns. You better watch yourself, mister, or Al Gore's going to flame your ass. Get your hands off my guns, you filthy Al Gore. And the people just clapped and cheered and hooted and banged on the tables there in the armory in Beckley. And the Republicans sent out a flyer that showed a knife put through a Bible. They sent that one to Arkansas, too. Yeah. But if Al Gore had just won West Virginia, we probably wouldn't have had September 11, 2001, and we damn sure wouldn't have had the war against the people of Iraq. How about that?
How close was it?
Oh, it wasn't.
Oof.
I mean, the thing is, it's been downhill ever since. In 2012, let's put it this way, the United Mine Workers had a long history of endorsing Democratic candidates for president. In 2012, the United Mine Workers of America couldn't quite hold their noses enough to endorse that one, you know, because of his war on coal. You know, you'd think coal being black, he'd be for it. Oh, by the way, the coal burning has begun here in my neighborhood. I can smell it. I can smell the coal smoke seeping under the studio door as we speak.
Yikes.
Yeah, nice. By the way, going back to the bumper music earlier, real quick, just for fun, Jack in Shreveport with a note. He says, subject line, WKAZ, comma, tangents from. Here's where my crazy brain went. When the song got to where they sung WKAZ, my mind goes to WKRP, and you talked about a DJ, so then Dr. Johnny Fever, and from there to Booger, and this is why I can't get anything done. I love a mind that works like that, because mine works all too similarly. And Kate with a note, subject line, this brings tears to my eyes, so many good memories. You bumped me out so many times. It's good to be appreciated, ain't it? Yes, it is, Kate. Yes, it is. Luda with a note. Subject line, veteran. Bob, I'm an infantry veteran, and I find it insulting when douchey people like that, meaning Nick Rahal, say that it's insulting to me. All they're doing is pandering to the gun goobers who probably never even served, but love to praise our troops, but say we're traitors if we don't agree with them about everything they do. And that's the truth. That's our veterans you're spitting on if you don't vote. You know, that's just bloody shirt waving. But what I was getting at along the way is the fact that there is every possibility that really bad things are going to happen in West Virginia this November. I know most people are looking nationally, hoping we can hang on to the Senate, hoping Mitch McConnell gets retired. I guess even progressives are hoping that Tom Cotton loses the Senate race to David Pryor in Arkansas, hoping against hope that barely a Democrat at all, Mary Landrieu, gets reelected in Louisiana stan. But we're on the verge of having something happen that happened a couple of years ago to places like North Carolina and Alabama. The Republican Party has not been allowed to control the state house in West Virginia since Christ was a corporal in the army of God. And they may very well get it. And by God, the West Virginia Senate cannot be counted on. They couldn't find their ass with both hands, the West Virginia Senate. And so it is going to be hell among the yearlings if the House goes Republican in about 11 days in West Virginia. Because this, oddly enough, this is the state, as much as I carp and complain, has some things to recommend it. You know, this is still a very pro-labor state. This is a state that is not right to work. This is a state that is right to earn a living if you can earn a living. This is a state where prevailing wage is still paid. And that's not just union people, that's non-union people. And this is a state that defines prevailing wage as the union wage. Which means that if you're some non-union mugwump and you get a job on a construction site that's getting Davis Bacon money, well, you're going to make a union living wage. You're not going to make $12 an hour or something ridiculous. You'll make union scale.
Does that include state money too?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Wow.
We call that the little Davis Bacon.
And you know, Boss Man Wayne has been one of the people who has gone and made life miserable for people who wanted to try to get around that. I can't tell you the thousands of people in West Virginia who owe Boss Man Wayne, not like owe him money, but owe him their undying thanks, and probably never know what he's done for them.
We fought an all-out battle when Pete Wilson was our governor. We saved
what?
Prevailing wage.
Was mayor of San Diego.
Yeah, rotten bastard.
I know, I hate him.
Well, he sold his soul to the prison industry. And that's why he wanted to get it changed.
Yes.
Because we built 22 state prisons in just two terms as governor of when Duke Magian and Wilson built 22 prisons.
Yeah, they both sucked.
All paid by bond money.
Your tax dollars at work.
Yeah, the life to prison pipeline.
I think we're just through paying off some of them.
And then didn't private contractors get hired to run them?
Oh, sure, of course.
Well, yeah, but they
contracted it out.
Some were union, some were non-union.
No, but what I'm saying is, okay, the state built the prisons with bond money and all the rest of it. But then it wasn't, quote, state prison guards that staffed them. It was private contractors who staffed them.
No, not the one up here.
Well, maybe not the one up there, but the majority of them were then staffed and rented out on contracts that the state guaranteed that they would have 90% fill rates for the private contractor to run. Wasn't state employees who were the prison guards and all the rest of it, so there were no health and welfare benefits, there wasn't the same wage as the standard prison guards and all the rest of it. It was a privatized number.
Which ones are you talking about, Roger? Because Pelican Bay is all union.
Yeah, Pelican Bay is.
I guess
I'm talking about
union.
A whole bunch of the other ones that then got leased out to private contractors. The thing they've done down in Arizona and all the rest of it. And they got a contract saying that the state will keep them at 90% full and we will pay you a certain amount of money per day for each prisoner. And it was a no-lose contract for the contractor that took over the running of the prisons.
Yeah, that's correct, Roger.
Oh, and by the way, backing up for a moment to the shooting that was mentioned earlier, Michael mentioned this or reminded me of this, and it kind of goes hand in hand. Anybody notice the story out of Nebraska, Stan? If you're a high schooler in Nebraska, Stan, it is now the official policy there that you can have your portrait taken, your senior portrait, holding your favorite shooting gun Second Amendment Freedom Protector Wolverines.
With your gun.
Well, as long as... I think as long as it's not down in your crotch and you're not licking the barrel.
Jesus.
It's got to be tastefully done.
Well, sweaty Teddy Nugent should have something to say about that.
I've seen some of the pictures on Facebook that were posted today.
But you can't have your picture taken with your family pet.
No cats. No cats.
No chihuahuas.
Then they might think you're a pedophile.
Those just aren't marking.
Good evening, everyone, at long last.
Hey.
Hey, Sergi. Hey,
Sergi.
I take it you didn't stare at the eclipse?
Okay, well, I have several things to note real quick, because I've actually been here all this time. For some reason, my new phone, well, new, quote-unquote, it's a hand-me-down. For some reason, the mic on it doesn't work with Skype, so I'll have to figure that out. Now, as far as the eclipse goes, no, I didn't stare at the eclipse. I'm not that dumb. But, of course, after it happened, the local news station's Facebook pages were full of people. It's like, I looked right at the eclipse, and I now have spots in my eyes. It's just like, oh, Lord, Texas, Stan. But, no, what I did, okay, is I have this little point-and-shoot digital camera. And I used a pair of sunglasses and my fingers to, create kind of like a ghetto filter, right? And I was actually able to take pictures of the eclipse through the camera, you know, looking at the screen on the little, I can upload those
is it safe for us to look at them, Sergi?
No, you can't look at the eclipse even through a camera. It makes you dumb.
Well, that's fine. That's fine as long as it doesn't give me Ebola.
He's not in the chat room now, I see.
Ebola?
Yeah,
Right.
Yeah.
Something happened to him.
Oh, by the way, wanted to put something out there for general consideration. Really tickled to note that $90 of Jay Cruzan's $150 challenge has been met this evening.
Awesome.
So that means there's $60, and that is done. I want to thank I want to send out thanks to Sylvia and to Darcy, and I mentioned Asa and Diane from Kansas Stan, and thank you very kindly for getting us that close, and hopefully we'll go over the top for the remaining $60.
Speaking of Ebola, the second thing I wanted to mention is that I am so teed off at CBS 11 here. Normally, they aren't one of the silly stations, right? But, you know, the news broke this morning that nurse from Presby who got Ebola and was being treated at the facility in Maryland, you know, she was discharged from the hospital, right, and gave this little press conference talk or speech or whatever. And so this morning I was minding my own business. I was cooking breakfast. I was watching The Price is Right. And just as the showcase results at the end of the freaking show were about to be, you know, were about to air, dun, 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 breaking news. There's what the... Now, you couldn't have waited 5 minutes for the 11 a.m. newscast. They cut off. It's just like, if there's not a tornado on the ground or aliens invading or, you know, a chemical spill or something that is time sensitive and threatens life and limb, you can wait 5 minutes so you don't interrupt the show people are watching because you have news coming up in 5 minutes normally anyway.
For-profit media.
I mean, I'm sick of Ebola. Ebola caused me to miss Thankfully, CBS.com puts the full episodes up free next day. So tomorrow, I'm going to see who won the Dadgum Showcase. That's like, I could wait 5 minutes. Oh, and I wasn't the only one either. Their phones lit up with I got a busy signal when I tried to call the station. It's like, I know that the phones were lighting up because us Price is Right fans, we are rabid. All right. So their phones were lighting up. And their Facebook page blew up, too. It's like, and I'm glad, you know, 5 minutes. You can't wait 5 minutes to give us more Ebola news.
Did anybody watch that news conference in New York last night?
Yes. That went on forever.
Well, I did. I couldn't believe it. It was like a broken record to explain exactly how Ebola is transmitted. And then they talked about the subway, and they talked about every place the guy had been. And these reporters start asking questions like they didn't even listen to what they were saying.
Of course not.
No, they came there with their questions ready to go.
And then they'd repeat the same thing. It sounded like a broken record every time a reporter asked a question.
But Mayor de Blasio, I got to tell you, when he gave his part of the press conference in Spanish, I have to admit, it wasn't nearly as entertaining as when Mike Bloomberg used to do it.
No, or George Bush, Dim Leader's attempts at Spanish.
Well, there's something about somebody with a very thick New York Jewish accent. I used to love to watch him cancel school. Los escuelas está closedo porque es coldo es fucko. It's like
closedo. Hey, by the way, I got to tell you, that is a beautiful, beautiful photograph of Lake Hooterville there, Carol. On Facebook.
I kind of put myself on mute. All of a sudden, the room I was sitting in was just pink. And I was like, what the heck? And I looked out the window, and I went, oh, man, I got to go take a picture of that. So I muted the microphone and went and did that and posted it.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, it is gorgeous. I'm telling you, it keeps me from climbing the clock tower and thinning out the neighborhood.
Thinning. Not wiping. Not wiping. Thinning. See, I don't know. That's kind of disturbing, Carol, because if you're thinning instead of wiping, that means you've got a list.
Oh, I have a list. I have a list.
And, which is probably not funny in light of present circumstances, but
well,
and kind of, you know, lo and behold,
I'm getting ready to
head out on Wednesday, and the whole thing up in Canada breaks, and it looks like our friends to the north are going to. Head down George Bush Boulevard. I guess Stephen Harper's already got draconian rights-infringing legislation ready to go through a terrified parliament, right?
Tax.
Yeah.
And we were talking in the chat room earlier. I had a tracker on Bob. I'm driving down the freeway in East Texan, Ferg. About the Canadian shooting.
Oh yeah, I just told Ferg to, you know, no sudden movements, be very, very businesslike. Yes sir, no sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am. Yeah, because, well, it gets strange. And by the way, lo and behold, a day after my son flies out of Sacramento, I see that there's been a big shooting, I guess, with a sheriff's deputy killed in Sacramento in a shootout with some carjackers.
Yeah, that was this afternoon.
Sacramento
County Sheriff passed away. I haven't heard anything about the two Placer County sheriffs. They went up into the foothills, this town called Auburn, and it was near the high school. And it just so happened my sister used to live down there, and all my nieces and nephews that she had, step nephews, and they all went to Placer High School. They had the high school locked down, but they ended up catching him. I saw that on the news just a while ago.
By the way, notes coming in from Darcy. First time I ever heard the story of the Horn, Bob. I'm so proud of what you and the whole Horn family have done. Thanks. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Darcy. And this from Sylvia. Great show. Good to hear the story behind the story. Congratulations on 9 years of really hard work. It's much appreciated. Love your daily themed productions. It's hard to say which is my favorite. They're all so good. And you know, that's another evolved process. More in Monday, Titanic Tuesday. Titanic Tuesday was born directly out of a story that Jim related on a Tuesday about the movement of the Titanic plates, and Prayer Meeting Wednesday's been with us. That's the oldest of the themed days. Horst came up with Thorn in the Side Thursday because that's from Catch 22. And then Friday on the Front Porch was sort of organic. It was once upon a time when we just had telephones. We had space for four people on the phone lines. And it started there, and then it sort of faltered. And then because of what Sparky had done with the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, we decided to see if the audio would be good. And lo and behold, it was. And this has turned out to be one of my – I don't know about anybody else, but this is one of my favorite nights of the week.
It is my favorite night of the week, period. It's I just wanted to speak, you know, since this is the anniversary, it's the perfect time. If it wasn't for you, Bob, and all of y'all, you know, rest of the Horn family commune, whatever you want to call it, I wouldn't be holding on to the threads of sanity that I still manage to cling on to every day. I mean, Front Porch on the show, the groups every Friday night, the intermittent groups through the rest of the week, they really do help me a lot, being stuck down here in Texas Stan, surrounded by assholes and idiots and ignoroids, and, you know, I mean, y'all help keep me sane, and thank you very much, and thank all of y'all very much.
Can I add to what Sergi said?
Go right ahead, Haley.
Well, I didn't discover or find your program until about 4 years ago, and I kind of found it by accident, and I think I might have listened a time or two, and then about 6 months later, I just, partly because I started cutting my cable bill, my satellite bill down, and eventually dumped it. Because I was watching MSNBC during the early evening hours back then. And then it was something I found an alternative to that. And I've, you know, started listening a few times. It was a couple of years earlier that I got broadband internet finally in this part of Arkansas where I live at, which helped me be able to listen to things other than some really bad lo-fi feed. And, you know, going from, I still have slow internet, but it's a far cry from 56K dial-up.
And one of the things we set up early on was Ben made sure that there was a, like a 12K dial-up stream, a middle-of-the-road stream, and a full-on CD quality stream. So there was like 12, 48, and 64. And that was, that was critical. Because, and to this day, there are still people who use the 12K stream.
I wanted to take a little. It was also tell you something that happened to me this week. I was involved in a protest in a suburb just north of Little Rock. A friend of mine invited me to participate. The Family Research Council, along with a certain state senator, decided to put on a concert at one of the universities in the Little Rock suburb, and they had rented out. And what had happened was it was billed originally as a concert, but it turned out to be a Family Research Council bus tour event. And they brought in Ricky Skaggs and a well-pastor prime country singer named Barbara Fairchild. And anyway, about 31 of us decided to protest the thing, and we went and it was a successful protest. and it got the news media's attention, and evidently it pissed a lot of people off that were, and to make a long story short, the concert, from things I've been told, drew 300 people to a 1,200 seat auditorium.
Wow, that's right up there with Glenn Beck's Christmas sweater program.
Oh, Lord. Oh, why did I? Oh, Bob.
Sorry.
I remember that.
I saw a clip of him the other day. I think he's still wearing it. And got a note in from Jim pointing out, yes, 9 years ago tonight, he was, in fact, the first caller. I do remember well, Jim. And let's bring the Gizmo line on. I suspect we have Bill. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, who else you gonna have? Oh, I'm enjoying the hell out of what I'm hearing. So.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, Bill.
Good evening. Hey, Bob.
Good morning, Bill. Tom.
Evening, Bill.
Good evening.
Konnichiwa, Bill.
Go ahead. Don't let me break this thing up. Go ahead. Keep going.
Tim from L.A. is here, man.
Yeah. So much,
can you hear
I'm
me?
Hearing so much good stuff tonight, so.
Hey, Bob, can I do a little history thing on the Horn Malloy chat group?
Absolutely.
Well, anyway, back in 2009, when I first joined the family after I got laid off and found you thanks to Mike Malloy, a bunch of us from the Horn chat, we all flowed over to Malloy's show after your show, and it back then he had a different chat room. I didn't know Greg, who's the head of the chat room now, but he had a different little chat room, and it had this little feature called the dock, where three of us could get in there and we could talk. And back then, not many of us knew about Skype, so there was one of them. The people that was part of the group mentioned Skype, so a bunch of us, we went over to Skype after Malloy, and we started, and then hence the group started. Tim was one of the originals, Mr. Gibson, Lottie, somebody, Tim helped me out, who was Spike.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the originals, and Pro Annie. And so,
oh, yeah.
And so it just kind of evolved. And then when the new Malloy chat room started, we got Greg and we got a whole bunch of other people from that chat room to come over after Malloy show over. So that's why it's called the Horn Malloy Skype group.
Yeah. And another one of those little things that happened along the way, long about the time of Katrina or shortly thereafter, there was a website community called Powers and Morrison.
Mm-hmm.
And that is how we met Cassie, who has, you know, been part of the family for so long and has, you know, graduated magna cum laude from Princeton now and is in the midst of her first year of law school at Penn.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's been a lot of, and you know, I should have mentioned earlier, the News Ninjas, That started, I think it was Bruce Birch who named the News Ninjas, just because Gene and Susan seemed to have this ability to read the entire internet every morning and just provide tons of content. And Carol is the first addition to the News Ninjas in years and years and years. It's a pretty tough league to break into.
I feel very honored, too, especially since I'm a relative new addition to all this. I mean, you guys popped my horn cherry here just a few months back. And
oh, lovely.
Well, I nominated you.
Yes, you did, Sparky.
And Bob approved.
But that is true. I can read the whole internet, you know, before I finish the last cup of coffee in the morning. So.
A lot of reading.
It's handy.
Hi, Carol.
Hey.
Hey. You finally know my voice.
Yes. But I feel so welcome here, and the chat room is a blast. Someone has me falling off my chair laughing at least every night.
Well, I have to throw something out there that I just for consideration that I hope will happen. We had someone until just now in the chat room by the name of Norma Desmond, and I hope I'm not breaking any confidences. And I use that word deliberately, confidences. You know, it could be that Norma Desmond's handle there was strictly confidential, but the fact of the matter is, the one, the only, the inimitable, Peter Godbold has been in the chat room this evening and is furiously trying to get Skype configured so that he can join in on this conversation. And, you know, I realize that the nature of radio and podcasting and such is very much in the moment, but I've gone back and checked in with some of Peter's archives over at whiterosesociety.org. And those things are as fresh today as they were, in the years when Peter was doing it. And it was amazing. It was truly groundbreaking. If somebody ever sits down and writes a history, there will have to be a chapter on Strictly Confidential, because it was the only globally available gay program on the internet. It was it. And it was a delight and a joy and, oh, come on, Peter, you gotta get Skype configured and then send the contact request to Sparky Dunk and we'll be there. I'm sitting here just all a titter.
Or get his Skype name and I can find him, Bob.
Well, I just saw in the chat room, he said, I can't stand it that I haven't configured Skype yet. He said, I'm logging off till I get it all working and we'll BBL, hugs Bob and all. Hugs, Peter, hugs.
Well, so he's Norma Desmond.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh.
I zap Scary Ebola tonight. I asked whoever it is to change their chat room name. And then when he wouldn't, he gave me some shit, and I zapped him.
Her,
whatever.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I'm sick of the E word.
Well, I think
let me jump back a little bit.
I think we voted on it the other night.
Let me jump back a little bit. I haven't seen Cassie in a chat room or anything else. Can you give us an update on Cassie? Other than what you just did?
That's about as much as I know.
She's graduated from I think it was Yale.
No, Princeton.
Princeton, okay.
Yeah. Magna cum laude.
Okay.
And
she's going on to law school or
at Penn.
Or what?
Yes, at Penn.
At Penn.
Yeah.
Because back when she was in high school, I tried to help her out a little bit and I had to write an email to her counselor because her brother wouldn't let her talk to anybody on the internet and da 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 da. But she is just a fantastic lady.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, she said a very long time ago that she planned on being president of the United States, and I believe her.
Well, if she runs, she's got my vote.
There's a note
if she runs, she has me as a volunteer.
Well, yeah, I'd volunteer too.
I'm sorry, Carol, what did you say?
I said there's a note in the chat room from Janet. It says, Bob Kincaid, Cassie told me she's not happy at Penn. She's not using her mind enough.
Texas Betsy probably told her.
Oh, okay.
Texas Betsy,
hey, Bob,
stays in contact with her.
If Kevin's listening, Kevin, I'm going to hang up. You call too, okay?
Oh, okay.
I was just talking to him a while ago, and I'm going to get out of here and give him room.
Okay, Bill. All right, thanks. Thanks for joining in on the birthday party. By the way, thanks going out to Rob in Iowa, and thanks Greg, thanks for kicking in. We are now $30 from meeting Jay Cruzan's challenge, and that's huge.
But you're not in a hole, right?
No. We got out of that thanks to what's already happened this evening. We were in a hole last night.
Okay, good.
And that's one of the things that makes it so important to kind of get out in front once in a while, because it would have been, you know, scary otherwise.
Well, you're getting close to the end of the month and you haven't pulled the pin yet.
Yeah. Just got a note in from Kate. Subject line, Peter! You know, lots of exclamation points. Hello, darling. Why don't you use the gizmo line? We're ready for your close-up. Love you. Yeah, silly me, I haven't given out the gizmo line number. See, you can't use the 304-574-8178 line. You can't use that with the Skype group. But you can use the gizmo line, just like Bill was doing right now, which is area code 304-663-HORN. 663-HORN, 304-663-4676. And Peter or anyone else who wants to get through on that line, you are more than welcome. So just to be clear on that, we are. Let's see who we got here. Hey, welcome to the program. Wait a minute. Learning curve. Okay, hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, Jim.
How are you?
I'm well. Yourself?
Pretty well. Happy anniversary.
Well, thank you very kindly.
Hi, Jim.
Hello. How you doing?
Hey, Jim.
Hello. Hi, Jim. Is that Turkey?
No, that was Tim a minute ago.
I'm sorry. It's a little problem with X-Men here. But what is this thing about a boy not, or a person not being able to have their photograph made with their cat?
Oh, yeah, that was
a firearm.
Yeah, that was a big story a couple of weeks back. It has since been resolved. A young man wanted to have his senior portrait made with his cat, and they said, oh, hell no. And then after it went viral on the Internet, that not only did they say yes, but the principal also had her picture taken with her cat.
Well, that's wonderful. I wish I could have my picture taken with Rufus Angelicus Episcopus.
Yeah, but you if I recall, size estimates on said Monsieur Rufus, you'd have to have a crane or something, wouldn't you?
No.
He's a big boy.
29 pounds.
Damn.
Right in my lap right now.
29 pounds.
Uh-huh. He's part wildcat.
That is a wildcat.
And the most beautiful creature that God ever entered into my life. He wasn't even 8 pounds when I pulled him off a snowbound patio.
By the way, Bob, may I mention something?
Please do, sir.
So, like earlier, I didn't get to mention this at the start of the call, okay, but something to note about the picture Duncan shared a few nights ago, the Ferg hugging the tree.
Yes.
Whatever pair of jeans he was wearing in that picture, I think it's about time to retire them. There's a big rip right on the rear end.
those are some happening jeans. He does have a couple of new pairs though, but those were cowboy in jeans.
That was the second thing I noticed after he got out of the truck for people to give him a ride down, was the jeans. First the hat, then the jeans.
Yeah, and
a huge rip right there. I'm just there's plenty. There's a found of retired jeans that are ripped. That's it.
Hey, Sergi. You know, it's really funny, though. In Japan, for example, those ripped jeans are worth money.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I wear ripped jeans. It's fashionable. But, I mean, if a rip develops right on my butt, I'm not going to wear them anymore.
And I'll have you know that photograph on Facebook has already run up around 100 likes or so, which is really cool. But I think that's more the subject matter of, you know, Ferg hugging a redwood. And you know, Sparky, you were 100% correct. the real epiphany came when he looked up.
I knew that. I told him don't look up until after I take the picture.
Yeah, but the problem is that tree he was hugging was a small one.
Well, it's only 50 years old, Roger.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying it's a small one.
Yeah, it's like but see, it's a teenage redwood for a teenage hillbilly.
And I have no problem with him wrapping his arms around it and being blown away and all the rest of it. I think that's fantastic. But the fact is, what he wrapped his arms around is a small tree. And yet it's a much bigger tree than what we see going down the road today when they're doing their logging.
Yeah, clear cut.
I mean, I remember trees that one tree was on a logging truck, and it was 12 foot around, and it was like a 35-foot-long chunk out of the tree. And Ferg, and you go to the parks today, and you see the trees, and they're really beautiful, like Muir Woods and all the rest of that. But when you really see big trees, they are unbelievably bigger than what Ferg wrapped his arms around.
Like the General?
No, the General is a Sequoia gigantea. I'm talking Sequoia sempervirens.
Oh.
And the sempervirens are the coast redwood, the giganteas are the Sierra Nevada. And the giganteas have more board foot per tree, but the sempervirens that are here on the coast are taller. But I mean, we're talking trees that are 15, 20 foot around the base.
Oh, yeah.
Over in the Sierra Nevada, you've got trees that are 30, 35 foot diameter, that like the General Sherman and the rest of that. But, you know, I just wish Ferg could have come over here to the coast, and I wasn't involved in it, didn't get in on it, and all the rest of that.
You didn't.
But I would have loved to have seen him come over here and take him up to the Tall Trees Grove and Redwood Park and Lady Bird Johnson Grove and Prairie Creek and places like that, which are unbelievably bigger than what he was wrapping his arms around. It would blow him away from that one to what's over here.
Well,
on
even the ones, in Muir Woods blew my mind.
Well, but Muir Woods are small because they all got logged off to rebuild San Francisco in 1906.
That's right.
You're not seeing old growth redwood in Muir Woods. You're seeing 100-year-old trees. You're not seeing 2,000-year-old trees.
Wow.
The pedigree of my trees come from the Santa Cruz Mountains.
Well, the Santa Cruz Mountains are fine, but they also got logged off to rebuild San Francisco in 1906.
But there's still some big trees down there, Big Basin State Park.
Yes, there are. All I'm saying is that in Humboldt Redwood State Park and the Lady Bird Johnson Grove and what's called the Worm in Redwood National Park will beat the snot out of anything in Santa Cruz.
Okay, so
we've got
something to add to the list.
Oh, yeah.
You see, he's still
the coastal.
He still didn't see the Bay Area. And, you know, I would love to have figured out a way to get out there just to go and sit down with him at Swan's Oyster House there. What is that, Polk Street in San Francisco? Yeah, just...
Well, I asked him the other day, you want to bail out of flying home? We can go to San Francisco. We went by the cutoff.
At which point he said, no, my father would have my head on a platter. Yeah.
No, I was just joking with him, but he didn't say much of anything, I don't think.
Well, all I want to say is, Bob, if you and Ferg and your wife and your daughters and, you know, the rest of that, ever come out here to California, get yourself about 6 hours on the highway north of San Francisco, and you got a place to stay. I got a house big enough. I got beds. I got all the rest of that crap. And I'll give you a tour of rural Northern California.
Oh, I'd love to see it.
On the wet side. Now, Duncan's going to give you the dry side. Not a problem. But I can give you the wet side.
We had rain all day yesterday, Roger, and we're going to get rain all day tomorrow, according to the...
You lucky.
Did you recognize it when you saw it?
Oh, yeah, but, I mean, you had to harass me about my red. I said, I posted some pictures, more pictures of the redwood tree, and said, happy, and you can stand underneath the redwood trees and watch it rain, and I get wet. You see, you go, that's what you got a window for. Well, it's not the same.
No, I don't imagine it is, but they don't grow trees like that out here in the Midwest.
No, I mean, Sparky knows I'm not putting him down because he lives on the dry side of the Coast Range, and I live on the wet side.
No, we've even wandered around
different places.
We've even wandered around Capitol Hill because there is one redwood tree on Capitol Hill. We wandered around to find it, and I don't know what they have to do to keep that poor thing alive, but I'm glad they do. It's
well, I'm going to have to start mowing my grass again because it rained and all of a sudden it started growing. The creek damn near overflowed its banks today because we had so much rain in the last couple of days.
That must explain the near miraculous agricultural prowess of Humboldt County that I've heard about.
Yeah, well, but it's still got to be on the west side. Well, but now, the west side has a lot of water, the east side doesn't, and the east side grows better what you're talking about than the west side does. But it's all relative.
I was talking
relative.
About asparagus.
Well, I'm looking right now at my asparagus. It's all covered with rice straw.
Wow.
And in February, it'll come up, and I'll be making my pickled asparagus and eating a whole lot of asparagus.
Yeah, see, that just sounds like heaven to me. Do you ever cover any of it up, Roger, and make that and do the white kind?
No. The only white I get is very early in the year when I put on grass clipping and rice straw mulch and all the rest of that, and I wait for it to show, and when it starts showing, I go out and pick, and then we eat white, and then I pull the mulch off, and the rest of it's green. I don't go for the white. It just... Too much work to cover it up and pull the covers off and all the rest of it, and it all tastes the same to me anyhow.
Hey, Bob.
Yes?
Did Ferg tell you about the solar panels along the side of the freeway?
No.
Well, there's a couple of the new orchards that we saw, and I said, look. I said, they're powering their water pumps with solar panels.
Oh, cool. You know, but speaking of solar, here's, okay, every time I see renewable energy anywhere in West Virginia, I get, you know, a little bit of a thrill just because I feel like it's death by a thousand cuts to the coal industry. I may not live long enough to see the coal industry dead in West Virginia, but I know it's going to happen, and it's going to be a glorious day when it is. We stopped in the home of my alma mater, you know, Harvard on the Mon, West Virginia University, which has become, in certain parts, nearly unrecognizable because it's just like the student bar district that I haunted for some several years is gone. It's been replaced by giant privately held apartments that are then leased out to students with the aid of the university, if I understand correctly. It's a public-private partnership. You know how those go. But what was charming to me is there's a nice little Middle Eastern restaurant on the main drag through downtown Morgantown, and we had a standing request to bring home baklava. And, you know, I was going to honor that request. So we struggled to find a place to park and went hiking back up High Street. And every so often I saw these, and this is probably, you know, people who live in civilization are going, well, yeah, but in Morgantown, West Virginia, on the corners, there are trash cans with solar panels on top of them. And they are solar powered trash compactors. And I stopped and I looked and I said, who knew the future would be on top of a garbage can? But it is.
Those are ubiquitous here in Fort Worth. The public trash cans, they're one to turn all of them solar.
Well, I was just thrilled to pieces to see those things. By the way, note coming in from Darlene. Happy 9th anniversary challenge. Congrats to the Horn, and thank you, Bob, and the Horn family for everything you do to make it a great, intelligent, and highly informative conversation radio program. I'd like to propose a $100 challenge. If the challenge is met by the end of this program or the next program at the latest, which would be this coming Monday, I'll contribute another $100 for a total of $300. So, if in the next 35 minutes, which would be better than waiting for the 3 hours of the next program, in the next 35 minutes, if $100 comes in, then Darlene is going to match it 2-1.
Dang.
As a birth, you know, just an anniversary birthday kind of one-off. So thank you very kindly, Darlene. Hopefully, if that can happen in the next 34 minutes and counting, that's just huge. Huge. Because it's the end of the month, and the end of the month bills are due now, which often turn into the first of the month bills. Oy. The PayPal interface is at, under the contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com. We're working on a button. We meaning John. And until then, the interface there, or you can just log into your own PayPal and type in bobkincaid@gmail.com as the recipient address and click sending money to friends or family, and that way you won't pay any transfer fees. Wow. And thank you very much to Texas T, who finished off Jay Cruzen's challenge, and now we are on our way to meeting Darlene's challenge. Thank you, Don. We are halfway there.
Hey, Bob.
Yes, Sparky.
Are you going to talk to John Fox over the weekend at all?
I hope so, but he's been extremely, you know, he's been on the road gigging. Why?
If you should talk to him, remind him he has to give admin privileges back to Lottie.
Yeah, oh no, that's already on the list, and as soon as he gets off the road, that's all going to be done.
So we can pay the chat room rent that's coming due.
Oh, okay, yeah, absolutely.
Anybody would like to contribute to help maintain the chat room, they can PayPal me at sparkydunk@gmail.com. And I will get it to Lottie.
Okay, good deal. Good deal.
We need it was like $125 last year.
Yeah.
For a year.
Cool.
But Greg tells me it might be more this year, since he runs the same thing at Malloy.
Right.
Now, we just have an extra feature, avatars.
Somebody hollered Bob a minute ago.
Yeah, it was I.
Hey, Jim.
Yeah, what are your plans for Halloween?
Don't have any yet. That's going to be, what, a week from tonight?
Yes, I might throw that out there.
Obviously, I think we'll be having a Halloween Friday on the front porch.
Well, it's a pity your son could have been in San Francisco for Halloween. I think he would have found that quite enjoyable.
Oh, I'll bet Halloween in San Francisco is something for the ages.
You want to serve? Take them.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
French fries.
In fact, I think he's off at some sort of Halloween themed event this evening. They get those sorts of things started early on.
Roger, you need to mute.
And then we're going to take a serving dish upstairs.
No. Okay.
I took care of it.
Lightsaber. So, Jim, are you all set up for Halloween?
Pretty much, yeah. Absolutely. I think I'll
I trust you don't. I trust you don't try to get Rufus to wear anything undignified. Wow, where's that coming from?
I don't know where it's coming from. Oh, but he has his own costume.
Oh, does he?
Mm-hmm. He has a big lion's mane.
Oh, very nice.
That wraps around his head.
On him, it's probably pretty convincing.
It is, absolutely, absolutely. But, you know, Halloween's become a real big thing. It's one of the bigger holidays, I think, right next to Christmas. And the thing about it is, you don't have to do this, you don't have to do that, you don't have to buy some of these presents or whatever. It's when, you know, people get an opportunity to sort of express exactly how they feel, what they want to be. But the thing I don't understand is this, and maybe somebody out there can help me. What is this fascination with zombies?
Anybody before I jump in?
They're cool.
No, so,
cool.
I don't pay any attention to it.
I mean, I just wonder, I mean, you see all these zombie shows on TV and stuff like this. You know, my first experience with that was back in 1975 or whatever, when I saw Night of the Living Dead, and that was enough for me.
Well, that was a truly terrifying film.
Yeah, it absolutely was. Like, it cost less than $10,000 for.
Yeah, it was shot at the Monroeville Mall up in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when I saw that, I said, you know, this is one kind of horror movie, and I enjoy gothic horror movies. I really do. But, I mean, these people that just stagger around with all this crap put on their faces and stuff like that, and then they're eating brains. I mean, you know, is this symptomatic of the culture?
Yes, that's where I was going to go, Jim. It's very much symptomatic of the culture.
It's fucked up. It's just all fucked up.
It's the most
fucked up thing I've ever seen.
But depending, you know, you gotta come at it culturally, though. I've sat here and played many happy hours of Left 4 Dead on the computer because, like I've said before, it is a whale of a good time to whack a zombie with a Stratocaster or an iron skillet or a baseball bat.
Shit, Bob! I've seen too many situations where living people were whacked with that sort of stuff.
In many ways, wow! And this is about to be really nerdy. It's serving the same kind of emotional need, cathartic need, that the audience at the Delphic theater competition 2,400 years ago got. It's pure catharsis, and the fact that it's zombies now, well, you know, we'd kind of run the gambit. You know, we've had in the 20th century, you know, mummies and. Everybody knows that Boris Karloff's Frankenstein bore no resemblance whatsoever to the philosophical inquiry that's embedded within Mary Shelley's book.
No.
The Dracula that's in Bram Stoker's book is not the Dracula of Bela Lugosi or even Nosferatu.
Well, I can tell you one Dracula thing that I enjoy very much, and that was the one that Frank Langella did years ago. And I can tell you one thing right now. If Dracula looked like that, I would have a Red Cross blood sign thing hanging outside my patio.
Because you are incorrigible. Yes.
No, just being honest. I mean, he was one of the best-looking, most attractive vampires I've ever seen. But now you have all these ghouls and slash them up. All they want to do is just tear your throat.
But there's a progression, Jim. It goes, you know, it goes mummies, Frankenstein, Phantom of the Opera, Dracula. The 50s give us, you know, with the arrival of the atomic age, the 50s give us the creature from the Black Lagoon, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I remember seeing Invasion of the Body Snatchers as a kid and couldn't sleep for a week.
Oh, God. I saw that thing of the creature from the Black Lagoon. I just wondered who pissed in the pool.
Well, and what was worse, you know, Mr. Spock was in Creatures. It was in the Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
And then, you know, also of that genre, of course, you know, Klaatu Barada Nikto, and then you come back with some of the gothic stuff with the return of Dark Shadows in the late 60s and early 70s. And this, it's all along a continuum, but the continuum itself is reflective of the culture in which it's taking place. And a zombie is a very much minimalist kind of deconstructed horror. You know, the horrors we got in the 50s were from our dabbling into things we ought not fool with, to wit, the atom. And you know, you get, you know, Godzilla starts out as a cautionary tale in Japan and comes to the United States as a campy monster movie. They're two different, entirely different concepts between the two cultures. But if you go back to the Black Death in Europe, the art is all very, you know, angels and yada 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 before the Black Death arrives, and after the Black Death arrives, everything's got a skull on it.
I think they lost most of their population, or a good percentage of it, to it.
Right, and I think the zombie culture thing is a it bears a direct relationship to where science is, okay? Whether it be HIV or, you know, Ebola, or any of even the flesh eating bacteria that is so prevalent in American hospitals. Because all of the current present zombie mythology, and I will certainly defer to anybody with greater expertise because I'm not an expert, but most of the current zombie mythology has to do with some sort of disease getting loose in society and transforming people into zombies. And zombies, of course, are also a portion of, for lack of a better word, voodoo mythology. You know, the walking undead.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you and I talked about that in Haiti and the experiences my uncle had with that when he was stationed there many years ago, and Santeria and stuff like that, thing. But, you know, going back to Invasion of the Body Snatchers, I think that's probably what happened to most of the members of Congress today. I think some evil force or whatever has at least come over a number of them.
Well, no, if you're talking about the Republican and in particular the Teabagger Caucus, I'm thinking it's pretty clear they've all had their brains already eaten.
Probably so. My God, those people are just absolutely nuts.
Now, one of the things that I find kind of culturally coincidental. And you know, where's Brother Albert when you need him? Brother Albert is a Left for Dead aficionado. There are various kinds of specialized zombie monsters in Left for Dead, one of whom is called a smoker and will wipe you out with breath. Then there's another thing, and it's this big trundling green thing that explodes and just splatters.
The boomer.
Thank you, Sergi. Yeah, we got another expert in the room. Why are you letting me talk, Sergi?
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Please, go ahead, Sergi.
I'm a big fan of Left 4 Dead on the PC, so I know the game back and forth, you know.
But particularly the boomer has kind of Ebola overtones. Wouldn't you say, Sergi?
Well, the thing about all those different types of zombies in Left 4 Dead is that each one is hypothesized. This has never been confirmed by the devs, but each one is hypothesized to have come from different types of people. The Charger and the Tanks, for instance, would be bodybuilders. The Boomers would be the morbidly obese. The Spitters would be, you know, your anorexic types, you know, people who are unhealthily underweight.
And smokers are just smokers.
Yeah, smokers would be smokers, or, you know, you know, people with lung issues, and I'm missing a couple that I can't really put my finger on what kind of,
well, the hunters, you know, the hunters,
the hunters. I would probably guess that the hunters probably would be people who are just, they're nimble. They're not big like, you know, bodybuilders, but they're nimble. The people you see doing free running, you know, for instance.
Yeah, and they're wearing athletic gear. They got the hoodie on. Right, right, right. Hey,
yeah,
let me,
are just common people. You know?
Right. And let me throw a thanks out to Carol. Carol just answered Darlene's challenge. So we got $45 to go, not to see your money doubled, but trebled. So there we go, which is awesome. In the immortal words of everybody who's ever gotten near a microphone, is this thing on? Peter, are you with us?
I think I'm with you. Can you hear me?
5x5, Peter.
Okay, that's good. I'm not exactly a Skype kind of guy, but I am tonight. It took a little figuring out, but I broke the Skype cherry, so to speak.
Well, we're so glad you did.
It's so nice to talk with you guys again. You know, it's I was around at the beginning. It was such a bittersweet memories that you struck earlier. When you were describing the beginning of the Head On Radio Network, and I really appreciated the things you had to say. It was purely by accident or divine intervention or spaghetti that I tuned in tonight on the ninth anniversary. What a surprise to do that.
Well, the universe knew we needed you.
Well, I'm not so sure that universe keeps total tabs on me lately. I do tend to live on the underground.
Well, somehow or another, the signals got through, and it's not a joke that the little fledgling effort that was that we were very nearly didn't you know, we took a couple of flaps out of the nest and just about, because you remember the two craptastic computers we had to begin with.
I do, Bob. Those were days of much. Oh Lord, I can remember a day that we spent the entire day, from say 8 a.m. till all the way into the early evening, working on one machine.
Well, and you had to get me off the ledge, because it was like, I mean, it started with unscrew the back panel, Bob. And I was like, because I didn't know. I mean, zombies may have come out. I was terrified.
Yeah. Well, there's that. And thank God we got through all that. But there's something I wanted to say, and that is, I've always felt a little guilty when I left the network for not giving a proper goodbye to everyone. And I know it's too late to do that now, but I do want to say that I acknowledge that. I would like to say, too, that I just had a bit of a meltdown. I don't know, Bobby. It's like when they say, I just can't go on anymore, and they won't come to this stage, and they throw a fit. I sort of snapped. And that's not funny, because a lot of people like to listen to the show, and I enjoyed doing the shows. There at the end, it was really kicking on pretty well.
Oh, it was. Had your miserable internet service provider not been the bane of all existence, well, who knows?
Well, you know, Bob, that was absolutely true. They were, the way the internet was set up out here, we finally had to write letters to the corporate offices. We got cease and desist letters from the CenturyLink attorneys for our daring to complain. But what it was is they had run fiber optics to all of the D-slams out into the rural areas, which is fine. There's one connects the other to the other to the other, like a daisy chain. It all works well if you've got fiber to connect it and there's enough bandwidth. But this little town, being the very last step, they decided they weren't going to spend any more money on fiber optics, so they hooked up our community, mind you, with 3D, T1 lines. It was copper
on
to
copper.
Our D-slam. Right. So that meant that we were sharing what, what's it, 1,500, 3,000, well, under 5 meg for the entire community. And it was monstrous. It was monstrous. And so then they told us, well, we're going to fix it by attrition. We're going to wait for everybody to who can't take it to just leave. And so that's when we really got mad. And we had everybody involved. It was a huge deal. But in any case, the Internet is fiber optic now, and it's fabulous.
And I can only imagine, because we went through 7 shades of hell here. And I actually thought of the massive frustration you dealt with, Peter. We went through 7 shades of hell here a few weeks ago when I finally had it up to my eyebrows with, or should I say eyebrow, with Shentel, you know, because we were on a cable modem, and they couldn't, and then they couldn't keep the upside of the connection going for a miserable 64 kbps single stream up to Ben's servers. And I lost my temper pretty badly. And then had, and miraculously, it turned out that U.S. Cellular has some of the most stunningly magnificent wireless internet in this area that I've been in big cities that don't have this good wireless internet. I get 20 really? Down and 10 up.
Really?
Yeah. Now it costs out the gazoo, but it's a beautiful thing. Because ever since, until the power supply died in the streaming computer, we didn't have a single interruption in the stream. It used to be, I'd check the stream the rerun stream before I went to bed, walk out of the studio, and maybe come back here at 3 o'clock in the morning, and it'd already be buffered up. And thanks to people like our friend Randy in PA, he'd send me an email and go, "Stream's down again, Bob." And I'd run it, and lo and behold, it was. And it got so frustrating, Peter. It got so bad that Ben Birch took time out of his incredibly busy life to go and do the engineering work to figure out what the problem was. Ben identified Shentel's problem like 4 hops up inside their network. Right. And the Shentel response was, well, bang, who knew?
Yeah, who knew?
But we finally, it's metered. But it is a brilliant connection.
Well, at one point here, CenturyLink was so bad at one point that they didn't realize they had been hijacked. We had to prove to them that whenever we were on the web, our third hop was always through a server in China. Always.
Jeez.
They didn't believe it. They had no clue, and they said we were lying. We had to print that stuff out for them. But, yeah, we were doing a third hop through China no matter when we're, you know.
And I remember at the very beginning of all of this, Peter, when you did some network tracing and said, you know, oh, by the way, y'all, and this was the genesis of the idea of Agent Fred. oh, by the way, y'all, the Department of Defense is listening every night.
They really were, guys. I was monitoring IP packets, and we were seriously being monitored by Blackwater, which is what, Z now,
Blackwater.
Or Q, or whatever they are.
And by the way, you got a note in from Kate in Montana now, Peter. She said, "Oh, Peter, do you still have to go to the end of the road for a connection? Are trees still falling on your car? I do so miss you. I go into the archives once in a while to listen to the old programs. Keep the power on, darling."
That is so sweet of her to say that. I think of Kate often. I do. Kate was very generous to me when I first started the radio show Strictly Confidential. When Kate came on board, she bought for me a gasoline diesel, not diesel, but a gasoline generator to keep the studio running when the power would fail out here, which is fairly common too. And that was a very sweet thing for her to do. She has always gone the extra mile to help the Head On Radio Network.
Absolutely, and does so to this day. And I have to tell you, Peter, I was in a little bit of a picking up and cleaning frenzy a few days ago, and I ran across a volume of Gay Dance Floor.
Oh, no.
and put and put it in the CD player, and just I cleaned the living room at 138 beats per minute.
That's so sweet that you had mentioned that. I sure love those old records. You know, we did gay political news. We interviewed writers, and we interviewed activists, and we interviewed transsexuals, and we interviewed just every sort of person you can imagine. And boy, I learned a lot. I mean, you know, here I was a gay kid, grew up in the rural South, and boy, that radio show taught me things.
Me too. There were nights that I would just we'd close the program, and I'd just sit there scratching my head. I remember what was his name? The veteran in New York City that was such a brilliant advocate for just treating. And he knew the history of every gay person who had ever served in the U.S. military.
He was amazing. And he was the guy, by the way, who introduced me to the gay couple who had been together, 60, 70 years? They had been together all this time, and I got to interview them on the radio. He set that up. It was an amazing interview because nobody knew that anybody had been together that long.
Yeah, and I remember the night Balerico was on the program, and
yeah.
I mean, you had at one point in time you had everybody who was anybody, but in a way it was ahead of its time, because the movement, you know, in a way hadn't quite coalesced. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And as a consequence, it, you know, it was just sort of these scattered souls out there doing what they could to make things better. And, for people who have never gone and listened to the archives, I just sort of beg you to go and do that, because it's a time capsule. It truly is, Peter. And by the way, just got a note in from John Fox who said, big old hug and sloppy web kiss for me. So great to hear your voice.
Well, John, I'm not as polished as I used to be. I've gotten older. I'm 61 years old now. And I'm right crotchety. Oh, and I've had a couple of real big blowouts at the church. I had to shut down what do you call those guys that put the Bibles in the motel?
Oh, the Gideons?
Yeah, the Gideons came out. This Gideon came out to do a fundraiser thing, and he did a sermon. Well, he decided he was going to raise it on his money on the backs of gay people. And he went through this, long, and this poor homosexual found a copy of the Gideon's Bible in his motel room, and it turned his life around, and blah, 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 blah. And I was just pulling my hair out. And as you know, I am not at all cautious about cussing him out at church.
Nor do you suffer fools gladly.
No, I don't. So here's the guy standing, church is let out, and here's the guy standing in the back of the church, or sitting, actually, with the man who invited him and the treasurer who was counting out his money that he had raised on our backs. And I sat down to him. I said, listen, I just need to talk to you a minute. I said, you know, our church is a whole lot like other churches. We have gay youth. We have gay men and gay women. We have the families of gays. We have sisters, brothers. We even have the grandmothers of gays here. And you just can't keep going around raising money on our backs. I went on and on. I can't remember. I'm older now, Bob. I can't remember like I used to all the stuff. But I totally shocked the people who overheard it, because that's simply not done in a little Southern church. He had never had anybody stand up to him and say, look, you're screwing people around like that. We don't put up with it anymore, do we, Bob?
Oh, no. And I saw something. You're Southern. I'm Southern, Peter. And I saw something in the last couple of days when I wasn't on the air, and just about had a conniption. And, you know what a conniption is.
Yes, I do.
This guy, his name is McKinnon. Douglas McKinnon, you may have already seen this.
Sounds familiar for some reason.
Former Reagan administration aide.
Oh.
And he has now written a book stating that he wants the southern states to secede from the Union.
Oh, that, yes.
Because
yes,
of
yes.
because of Tegay.
Of Tegay. Yeah. Tegay, is this the guy that wanted to name it Reagan?
Yes, yeah, oh, that's him.
Oh, dear Lord.
And yeah, see, that, and all these years on, I read these stories, and I say, oh, my God, Peter's throwing things somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. And when I read stuff like that, it's at this point we have cut the head off the snake. The snake is in the road, and it's still moving. It thinks it's alive. It thinks it's connected, but it's dead. And still, it's pitiful. It's a pitiful thing to watch. And still, they're going to get in every jab that they can.
Well, yeah, and they're gonna fundraise on the backs of gay people and the people who love and care about them. I mean, I don't know if he's listening this evening, but you know, our dear friend Edward in Dallas. We got to help celebrate a marriage.
Really?
And you know, that evening when he called to tell us that they'd gotten back from getting married, I was thinking of you, because you know, so many of these conversations, especially Peter, especially, and I think this is where you've shone as a sort of liaison. You know, not that you got your morning mailing of the gay agenda from anybody. But as a liaison to the straight community, I think it was absolutely invaluable.
Well, it did kind of feel like that. I did feel like I had a foot in both worlds. It was the funniest thing. I'd never dreamed that the show would turn into stuff like that, but it did.
And that's the funny thing about what happens here. You can start out absolutely convinced that it's going to be one thing, and the next thing you know, it is something entirely different. You know, when we began the horn. We had, for instance, a wildly expensive 40-second delay unit here.
Oh boy!
And because we were gonna get picked up by radio stations, and we were all set with the stop tones and the computer automation stuff and a brake clock, and Agnes was sitting here running brakes and hitting marks, and you know, she'd never done any of this before, and she learned how to do it.
Yeah,
and she was very good at it. And then we realized, no, nobody's going to pick us up. This is going to be an internet operation. There's no room for progressives in terrestrial radio. It's so corporate and so right wing. And so, you know, that to this day, that magic delay box is sitting in the rack somewhere in the North Georgia mountains in the Malloy studio. Because they had need of it on an emergency basis early on. And I packed it up and shipped it.
That was great.
It's just amazing. And I think of you most every day. And I got to tell you, Peter, it thrilled my heart. You were among the very first emails into my email box when I started showing up on MSNBC.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't believe it. I thought, way cool, he did it. He broke into the big time. I thought to myself, well, you bitch. Not at all. I was so happy for you, and I couldn't resist emailing you immediately. Bob, do you know that you're on TV? I was amazed.
Oh, it thrilled me to pieces to know that you'd seen it and you'd heard it, and you took time to write. And,
yeah, you did. You pulled it off. I was just, wow. God, it wasn't me.
Well, I mean, I'm still terrified every time because I'm afraid that, I forget who it was. It was some right winger that I was watching the other day, and he was live on television, and he reached up and picked his nose a little bit.
Oh my!
And I'm thinking, please, Jesus, don't ever let me do that. I mean, send the lightning bolt down and fry my hand off before it gets to my nose, Jesus, please.
Bob Booger eating's in their DNA.
Well, and then there we go. You know, every Monday night we refer to them. They're booger eaters, and you know, there it was, the empirical proof.
Yeah.
Oh my! Oh my word!
won't take any more of your time. I'm going to stay in the room and listen, though, of course. But I do want to let you know the latest news flashes. We all knew it was coming, and it's here, and that is gay marriage has brought on the Ebola, and it's from the Lord, he told somebody.
I had no idea.
Yep, you knew it was coming, though, in your heart of hearts.
Where do you guys find time?
Well, we're not sinking the Titanic.
Causing earthquakes and volcanoes, tidal waves, tornadoes.
Out of power we
destroying
had,
every heterosexual marriage in the United States, and you still got time to unleash a deadly virus from Africa.
I know it. And do fashion shows, too.
Why do you think we've all been so quiet? We're scared to death of him.
What? Okay, and just in these few short minutes... And this is just a pitch to go back into the archives at WhiteRoseSociety.org. If John Fox was here, it would be like old timers day at the horn section.
Is he okay? He just emailed you, Is he still in?
John's still in Australia, and John is working harder than ever. I mean, I'm sure he won't mind. I'll have to send you a track or two off the album of the band that he's playing on.
Music, fun, yes, I'd love to hear some of John's stuff.
And going great guns, working, I think he's working on crafting the 48-hour day, John is. He's in the chat room right now, as a matter of fact.
He is. Well, he's legend as far as audio equipment is concerned. I remember when I first got the limiter here, I never used a compressor before, and over the phone, he told me how to set it all up. Never saw it before. Never used that brand. And it was all configured within 5 minutes.
It was perfect.
Amazing. Yep. Yeah, he's amazing. Thank you, Bob.
Oh, Peter, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm glad you find. And you know what? Now that you know how to use the magic of the Skype, it's not like you're not welcome.
That's absolutely true. I have the power of the Skype. And do you know that my regular phone now isn't a regular phone? It's an internet phone. And all my communication is so nice and stable these days, and it's not like the old days when we would hang on by a hair. It's good.
Oh, no. When we would stand outside and scream.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, we have run up again. We've actually run over by a couple of minutes, but it's been a wonderful evening, and I'm proud to announce that we're only $45 away from meeting Darlene's 2-for-1 challenge. No, excuse me, $35. We're only $35. No, only $25. Wait. $35. $25. Thank you very kindly, Thomas and Sal. We're $25 away from a 2-for-1 challenge, courtesy of Darlene.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, that's a big deal. So maybe that can happen in the next few minutes. Thanks for sticking around over. Thank you, Peter. Thank you so much. We love you dearly, and when I go in the next room and tell Agnes that you joined us, she's going to be, why didn't you call me? And, of course, I've muted periodically and screamed myself hoarse, Agnes, Peter's on the line.
I miss her so much. She just is
She just loves you to pieces, as we all do. Don't be a stranger now that you know. And the gizmo line's there, and just, whenever you feel up to it, jump right in, because you are absolutely welcome.
Thank you.
And
thank
Kate you so says much. You will love John's new music.
And, oh, cool!
And she says I still listen to I Just Want to F and Dance. I miss you.
Oh, she does. I still think that's good too. There's a song that really is very explicit, and it's fabulous. I'll have to ship you a copy. You can play it over and over.
Oh, absolutely. Y'all have a wonderful evening, everyone. Thank you for a lovely 9th anniversary celebration. Thank you for all the kind words and the participation. And a reminder, the conversation will continue on after the Molloy program, about 12:05 Eastern, 9:05 Pacific, and something 05 wherever you are, except Iran, who has a half-hour time zone. But I don't think we've got a lot of Iranian members. They're welcome, but we don't have them. But thanks, everybody, for joining in. Thank you on this 9th anniversary to everyone who has participated over the years, to everyone who has made all of this go. Thank you. On behalf of the whole Horn Family Commune Congregation, on behalf of Tribe Kincaid, thank you.
one and all. Thanks to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy. She's not here this evening, but she's a moderator as well. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you to John Fox. 9 years, man. 9 years. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. None of this happens without the good offices of the White Rose Society. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHEACT.org, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.